My guest today is the winemaker at Philosophy Winery in Maryland, of course, one of our favorite drink local states, Kimberly Johnson. Kimberly, thank you so much for doing this with me today.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff, for having me. I appreciate that.
So, Kimberly, let's get the stuff out of the way. Philosophy started in 2018. Your partner, Denise Matthews, sommelier, and you make Maryland wine in Maryland, correct?
Yes, we make high-quality Maryland wine from Maryland grapes. We don't use grapes from anywhere else.
Oh, that's so good to hear, because you and I could probably now have a 45-minute discussion on all the people who, for what seemed to be good reasons at the time, buy grapes from California.
I agree.
Call it local wine.
Yeah.
We'll try not to do that. We'll try not to. Hey, so I wanted to talk to you today. We're sort of maybe a little bit coming out of the pandemic. I'm in Texas, where, of course, we're not coming out of it. You're in Maryland on the East Coast, where things seem to be a little better. Can you maybe give me a sense, Kimberly, of how, where do you see wine drinkers today? Or what are we looking for? Are we getting kind of back in the pre-pandemic mindset? Are we still being careful about price? Just your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I have to say, so we started our first vintage was a 2020 rosé, and it started during the pandemic. I have to say we did very, really well because everyone was home. They had nothing to do but to buy online, either it be wine or on Amazon buying something. So we did very well. We also hand delivered our wine to everyone, COVID strict and restricted and everything. But it sold very well during the pandemic because of people being home. I also noticed that other wineries, they had the same thing happening to them. They started going to more delivery process than having people come to the tasting room. If they had was a tasting room that was outside, I could see people during the pandemic, they were open to going, but inside, no one really wanted to touch that.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that consumers are being a little more, they're being a little more willing to try different stuff with wine now? Is it still, especially for what you do, I'm assuming if it's Maryland wine, you've got people a little more adventurous to begin with.
Yeah. So what I love about Maryland wine is that we really have, and we have a really good culture, and we're growing as the industry grows. There are people who come in and they say, I'm looking for a California Chardonnay. And I say, well, I'm so sorry, we're not in California. I do have a Maryland Chardonnay, and I can tell you the tasting notes. So then I think by, you know, what Kevin Addicks and his team is doing and all of the Maryland Wine Association, we're basically just trying to get the educate the consumers on what you're drinking locally. Because what has been growing in Maryland, I've seen, is the agriculture. People want to eat meat that's been slaughtered or managed and birthed and everything in their own area. So meats, cheeses, veggies, things like that. So with that agriculture going on, wine, Maryland wine has grown as well.
Are your customers, the people buying your wine, are they typical wine consumers? Are they younger? Or are they just, do they drink other things? And I ask that because one of the problems, which I'm sure you're well aware of, that comes up in wine, especially over the last couple of years, is that we seem to have fewer younger people interested in wine. And local wine was always supposed to be a way to reach the younger consumers, mm-hmm. the Gen Xers, the older millennials. How do you guys see that?
You know, our clientele basically they are 30 and later. We don't see a lot of 20-year-olds. You know, I have a 22-year-old myself, and she's drinking something else. So I noticed that their palates are not evolved enough to drink a dry red or a dry white. Their attention spans are also not long enough.
Be careful here.
Sorry. to listen to my spill of how this wine was created. Yeah, they're just like, pour it. And they really don't. Sorry, I'm talking about my daughter actually right now.
I was just going to say, you can't get your daughter to try your wine?
My daughter, yes, she actually works in the vineyards with me. She has been in the wine industry with me for a very long time. She just doesn't like wine. And she's like, Mom, that's too dry. And I said, I really tried to build her palate at a young age, when she turned 21. But instead of drinking, you know, vodka and all of that stuff.
Oh, no, I know. I taught some people in their 20s and 30s beverage management and wine at two community colleges in Dallas. And it's, you really got to get them to think differently than they thought their entire life. So you're on the front line there. How can the wine business do this? How can the wine business actually get younger people interested in wine so that we don't have to depend on the same old people that we've always depended on?
That's true. I would say festivals, because that gives the consumer an opportunity to actually taste different things. But it's just the people that they hang around. I don't know. I really don't.
No, it's funny. It's funny you said it, because I ask everybody the same question and everybody has the same answer. Well, I like wine. I can't quite figure out why no one else does.
Yes.
So in terms of, we're talking a little bit before about local and about how popular that seems to be. Have you seen in a couple of 3 years, and especially since the pandemic, have you seen some changes? You mentioned people are more interested in local products. Why do you think that is happening?
I think that's the way that, you know, we have Whole Foods, we have Trader Joe's. I think that's the way things, the younger generation has started to now want to know more about what's in their food. They want to know if it's processed, if it's not processed. So I feel like we've gotten to a point in the industry to have agriculture actually be a major in a college. You know, I have a really good friend who studies agriculture at Virginia State, and she's studying to be a winemaker. But she has a farm, her family has a farm here in Westminster. And, you know, she's very young, but she's starting from the very beginning to just know what's in her food, know what's in her wine. And that's basically how we get people to like really good wine, especially in Maryland.
I know Maryland's always had kind of a problem in terms of the drink local thing. Mm-hmm. Because you're right next to Virginia, which is, of course, one of the more of the famous local states. How do you think Maryland, and again, this is not a criticism of Maryland wine. I know Dave McIntyre at the Washington Post, my friend, and I haven't tasted Maryland wine in a long time, and there's certainly been an awful lot of good Maryland wine. How do you establish an identity for Maryland wine? How do you guys work to do that?
You know, so we actually have had an identity for years, and it was sweet wine. It was festival wines. It was just not a good thing. So I think that as the new wineries, just like myself, have established themselves, we've established and put our foot down to basically say, this is what I'm going to produce. It's going to be this type and this style. And we want to make sure that Maryland is not just known for its sweet wines or its festival wines or meads and all, that we're also known for really high quality wines. Also, with the wines being made by Maryland grapes, we want to make sure that people also know that this is good wine that comes from our soil. Unfortunately, the wine map jumps over us. We basically have Virginia, then we have Pennsylvania, and they don't know this little teeny place that's in the middle, which is Maryland. So we're really trying to put Maryland on the wine map. I would love to be a part of that, that scenario there.
Now, thank you for mentioning Pennsylvania, because since I didn't mention it and only mentioned Virginia, my friends in Pennsylvania would then be very angry with me. So I'm very glad you mentioned that and saved me from getting yelled at.
Yeah.
So tell me how difficult it is to be a small winery during the pandemic. Is it difficult finding employees? Is it difficult, you know, raising money? I mean, how has that worked?
So for us, we basically started off. So my background is finance and accounting, and my business partner, Denise, her background is finance and accounting. So we basically started with a business plan. We had an idea and a business plan.
Right. That puts you ahead of almost everybody else.
Exactly. You know, actually, that's what Kevin said. He said the same thing. He says, you know, because when we went to talk with him, we had our business plan, and it went from what we're going to do from now to 5 to 10 years from now. And he was like, whoa, I really don't see this too often. You basically see people with grapes and they say, I want to make wine. And it's just like, you know, what about the TTV and what about the laws and the state and all of that? So for us, we started with a business plan and we followed that business plan to the T. They in our we're in our second, third, fourth vintage. So 2021 will be our fourth vintage. We have been asked to increase our volume. But the thing is that we as business women had to think about, does this make sense to us? We would love to make more wine, but guess what? You have to have money to do that. You have to have capital to do that. And you have to have somewhere to have your wines, sell your wines. It's a whole process. It's not just increasing volume and buying more product, buying more grapes, making more wine. You have to sell that stuff. So you know, for us, we maintain ourselves as a business and a winery, but we always go back to that business plan and see what makes a good idea for us.
No,
But yeah.
that's an interesting approach because an interesting and a logical and a sensible approach because you talk to enough people who get into the wine business and the very first thing they want to do is make more wine because that's the only way to make more money. And the next thing you know, they're sitting there looking at wondering how they're going to pay for everything. So no, I'm impressed. I mean, that's
Oh,
I
thank
think
you.
we I've interviewed enough people over the years at regional wineries to know. If you're going to offer some advice to somebody who wanted to start a winery, which, regardless of anything else, everyone still seems to be wanting to do, which surprises me. But you know, what advice, Kimberly, would you give them?
I would say have passion and have patience because, unlike beer and spirits, where you can come out with a new product anytime you feel like it, harvest for grapes is once a year, and we're currently in harvest right now. What you get from harvest that year is what you get. 2018 was horrible, 2019 came in real well. 2020 and 2021 have been really good to us as well. So I would say have patience and have passion because during those times when you're going to hear the word no more than you hear the word yes, or you're going to have to run around trying to find an answer to how to the TTB is asking a question. You know, so patience and passion, that's what keeps us going.
Well, listen, thank you very much for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it. I'm trying to, not write about, not interview the same old people. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. It's just, again, it's a pleasure to talk to people who go into wine and actually want to be successful and have a plan.
We have a plan. Oh, I appreciate that. It's very nice meeting you.
Well, listen, thank you again, Kimberly. This is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon. Thanks for listening. So long until next time.